We're back with All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. The two biggest political parties in Britain are trying to woo the third party Liberal Democrats into a coalition to form the next government.
I want to make a big, open and comprehensive offer to the Liberal Democrats.
I'm very keen that Liberal Democrats should enter into any discussions with other parties.
I would, of course, be prepared to discuss with Mr. Clegg the areas where there may be some measure of agreement between our two parties.
The voice of British Prime Minister and Labour leader Gordon Brown, and earlier Liberal Democrat Nick Clegg and Conservative David Cameron. Cameron's Conservatives got the most votes in Thursday's election, but they didn't win enough seats to form a majority government. It's called a hung parliament, and it's the first one Britain's faced in a generation. James Fallows of The Atlantic joins me, as he does most Saturdays, with a watchful eye on the news here at home and abroad. Jim, happy Saturday to you.
Thank you, Guy. Nice to talk to you.
So, Jim, what I find more interesting than the horse trading in Britain right now is how votes translate into seats in the parliament. So, you know, Labour edged the Liberal Democrats in the total vote by just 6 percentage points, but they got 200 more seats in parliament.
Right, and I think we can think of this in the American perspective as being an exaggerated version of our own electoral college. We know twice in our history we've had a mismatch between the popular vote and the electoral vote, and there is a version of that affecting England right now, where you have the Liberal Democrats who got almost a quarter of the vote, and they only have 1/11th or so of the seats in the parliament. They and Labour together have 52% of the popular vote, but they can't constitute a majority. And so this is a particular problem for Britain, because most other parliamentary systems where we're used to hearing of some kind of multi-party coalition government, they all have some kind of proportional representation so that minor parties, you know, have their share. Britain doesn't have that, and that's a problem for them now.
And this is an issue that the Liberal Democrats are really pushing to kind of reform the system.
Indeed. And this has a big bearing on the coalition building efforts going on now, because the Conservatives, who have the plurality, would of course love to have the Liberal Democrats join them, but they don't agree on this issue of first order importance to the Liberal Democrats. So how they're going to finesse that is a challenge, and also suggests whatever government comes from this is not going to be a very long-lived one. There'll be another election pretty soon.
Hey, Jim, I did something last night that financial advisors say you should never do, which is I checked the balance on my retirement fund.
And, oh, no.
and I discovered that in a matter of hours this week, it lost about 6 months of steady gains. And it strikes me as somewhat worrying that such a volatile swing could have been caused perhaps in part by manipulative trading. I know you've been following what's going on in Congress in terms of dealing with financial regulation, but what happened this week, could that be prevented?
It's instructive how many different kinds of volatility seem to have been involved in this past week. There are the fundamentals of the U.S. economy in particular, which actually seem to be getting better. There is the volatility of the world economy driven by this crisis in Greece, which brings us into all sorts of questions of the euro. And then there seems to have been this machine trading factor, which no one really knows about yet, but which had some role apparently in the 1,000-point drop of the Dow. And in retrospect, there probably are ways to say, okay, that kind of machine-induced panic we're not going to allow. But as the world's economies and financial systems become so connected nanosecond by nanosecond, there is, you know, exposure to this kind of problem again.
Jim, one last question before we go. I know you've spent time in the Philippines. This week, the once disgraced Marcos family may revive its political fortunes. Ferdinand Marcos Jr., this is the son of the late dictator. He is running for the Senate. His mother, Imelda Marcos, of course famous for her many thousands of shoes, is running for a seat in the Philippine Congress. Given the corruption that this family has been associated with, how is it that they're being given a second chance?
This is something which is simultaneously unbelievable and almost predictable about life in the Philippines. Anybody who's spent time there has to love the country and also feel a kind of melancholy about the patterns in the nation's political history, where there is in Philippine politics, I say this with great respect, a kind of soap opera quality in which the Marcos family has played a dominant role now for half a century. And Imelda Marcos, even though, of course, her husband was exiled and driven from office, there still is a hold she has in the popular imagination. So in a way, it is something which anybody who's followed the country has expected to see.
That's James Fallows. He's national correspondent for The Atlantic and a frequent guest on this program. You can read his blog at jamesfallows.theatlantic.com. Jim, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Guy.